Good morning, Intuitive Intensive. Today is our second ever Catalyst chat for the Emergency Competency Summit. There are a number of people who may or may not be able to join us. I'm going to launch into current circumstances. We have some text. Maybe I can read it. I think I can. Intuitive Public Radio is organizing collaborators to subsidize direct health support for houseless veterans and survivors of sex trafficking in our network. Many are disabled or severely disabled. All are working hard amidst extremity to build safe, inclusive community resourcing accessible to everybody. Please donate what you can on this page. There's going to be a page, or reach out to max@intuitive.pub, which is my email address. t.me/maxmorris is my direct messages on Telegram Messenger to share other kinds of resourcing with our initiative, anchoring joy and gladness, gratitude and blessings, Intuitive Invisibles. Restore healthy communities. Join us to organize direct health support for houseless, disabled, and severely disabled veterans and survivors of human trafficking. Here we have a link. I can paste this, I think. I have executed this task successfully. So those are some words that we made this morning. It's this morning. And gosh, a lot of very intense things have been happening. It's very clear that the more of us who are collaborating together, the more amazing strengths we discover. And when we put our minds and our hearts together, the solutions that emerge are very, very powerful and can immediately relieve suffering and problematic circumstances that many people have been conditioned to see as hopeless. But we're not big fans of hopelessness. I just remembered that I planned to give my video neurons a break. And it's actually somewhat new for me to be broadcasting audio only on Zoom. It seems to require me to sit closer, which is interesting. Maybe because I'm expecting people can't read my lips if I'm sitting further away. That seems silly. There are so many access challenges that we're navigating. That is one tiny little thread. We are going to be having a intuitive public webinar. I believe it is number 5, numero 5. And the subject of today's webinar is global philanthropy in ignorance of wicked problem solving. These are, I believe, the words of Brendan Heidenreich, or they may be adjusted. I think they were adjusted in conversation in some way. This being a topic that we can really focus on and dig deep into to help global philanthropy recognize the solutions in their immediate vicinities that serve the needs and, I mean, basic desires for survival that is shared by everybody. I see Brendan connecting. I'm going to pull up the page on Eventbrite. Okay. I can sort of hear you, Brendan, but not very well. Can you say something else?
Yeah. Hey, can you hear me?
Perfect. Yes. Loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay, good.
I'm going to pull up this page. I made sort of a general introduction. Do you want to introduce for yourself topics that are most relevant to you right now? I mentioned the webinar later today. I should also mention the time while I'm at it. But I'm not pulling the page up as easily as I wanted. So I'm going to let you talk for a few minutes, and I'm going to go find these pages so I can bring them back and read the details accurately.
Okay, sure. I'm thinking, I'm thinking about, like, I'm working on emails to address financial emergencies, and I keep running into this thing where there are life and death financial emergencies, and all kinds of people, unless they do feel and are capable in the moment of helping somehow, then they're not. And then they usually say some version of boundaries if there's like an extended conversation about it. Or it gets into this topic of triage and or blame shifting, or because it's like if people acknowledge, okay, there's like a real emergency, then it's like, whose fault is it? If no one can help and no one feels comfortable helping, or the total amount people are willing to help is not enough or does not seem to be enough going forward for a given situation, then people start interpreting and coming up with interpretations for what's going on. And I'm interested to unpack that.
Yeah, it's very strange experience when we come into contact with these kinds of interactions where people that we reach out to for assistance, all different kinds of people in the network who have reached out to helping professionals and community leaders and other kinds of people for assistance, people that we reach out to feel really strong in certain specific areas. And they are generally very committed to caring for people in the ways that they know that they can. And then, Brendan, it's like you're describing a kind of precipice where someone feels very competent and confident in the help that they provide to others. But when it passes that threshold where it seems to be no one's job, people do not have a way of conceptualizing how to move beyond to think, okay, well, what do we do if this thing is causing terrible destruction in our communities and it happens to be no one's job? The levels of severity that we're talking about, the compounded intersections of invisible violence that our community members are experiencing every day. If that turns out to be no one's job, how do all of us come together as the greater community and say, well, we want our communities to be safe, and we want there to be a means for people who are in very extreme circumstances to have assistance and caring people around them and a part in their community activities that is unique to them, where they can bring their strengths and all of us can respect living beings and benefit from respectful interactions and exchanges of energy with living beings. We're trying really hard to describe more the world we want to be navigating, and how that emerges from the world we're navigating right now or have very recently been navigating. I don't know if I expanded that too much, but Brendan, if you could talk about where you're at on some of those directions.
Yeah, for sure. I think part of it is many people do not even conceptualize that there's a collective or community-wide or multi-person problem around any of the several different interrelated issues, whether it's violence or financial emergencies or problematic healthcare situations or dangerous or like violent or inept or whatever, all these different types of basically you could say unjust or absurd or messed up or situations that were really something should be done. And they're not okay. And I think broadly among many people in the common culture in the United States and in the West and in much of the world now, there are certain patterns that come into play in these situations. And it's not recognized, the collective emergency that's at the intersections of these things is not recognized, except somewhat like among like disability justice and different groups of people do recognize that there's a collective emergency at these intersections. But many people, especially people with resources and access and so on to more things and audience and so on, do not recognize a collective emergency of the sort, like with the climate change movement.
So can we, I want to let you finish before I jump in.
Yeah, go ahead. It's just, I mean, I use the climate change movement as an example of where people avoided really talking about the climate situation as an emergency that is a threat to humanity in a near-term sense until not that many years ago. And then Margaret Solomon wrote this paper and it's like now there's a movement of people who are like, yeah, there's a climate emergency and we don't need to just panic, we can do things. And that has not happened with these people helping issues in the same way.
So, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just want to say many people do recognize and are working on like one or two issue components of the collective emergency, like the opioid crisis, the pain medication restriction crisis, the suicide, high rates of suicide. Like there's all these different single issue worlds where people are working on it, but all like so many of these different single issues intersect in all these different ways, and bringing them together is overwhelming to many people. So yeah, I mean, that's that kind of wraps up what I was saying.
So I wonder if you could bridge between this that you're describing now and, well, I mean, basically, do you want to say something about the Margaret Klein Solomon article? Because it's so good, it's so impactful, and it's such an important frame in terms of positive action taking in the scariest of circumstances. But if we could bridge that to global philanthropy in ignorance of wicked problem solving. Like if we can talk about those two things in the same space, I'd be very interested in how that unpacks.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Basically, what we're doing with Intuitive is we're looking at the intersection of a bunch of problems that even by themselves are considered wicked problems at a societal level, and looking at them intersectionally, both as large issues and in the lives of individual people who experience them intersectionally in different combinations. Like if someone's getting terrible help while also being hurt and in stressed relationships with people who care, and in getting hurt by other people intentionally, and failed by professionals who are doing their very best to help people. There's a bunch of systemic wicked problems that are involved in that, and it's one person with a basket of their own wicked problems. And there's a lot to be learned looking at the space between those things, like what's going on. Like often people identify policy. More people are recognizing that professional education has gaps, and that's a big thing I'm raising personally as a problem and opportunity. And then also the way the roles are defined in society, in modern society, is very fragmented. Like trauma therapist, doctor, organization that might help find housing, security, there's really nowhere to turn if you don't have help. Police won't provide 24/7 security, etc. It's just like once you're hurt or dead, you can file a report basically, and maybe the person who did it, if they could, like the only outcome really is that they would end up getting punished by the criminal justice system after a bunch of mutually traumatic experiences. And
I see a lot of this in a lot of places happening in a lot of different ways. It's very you're describing an intersection that connects to lots of problems. So like when we verbalize it like this, that's really powerful, because we start to have opportunities to really do something about it, but not only in one kind of situation, in all of these different situations.
Yeah, exactly. And we could step through a bunch of those. To answer your question, basically, organizations and professions are not, broadly speaking, competent to address these issues. They're not trained to do so. They're not paid to do so. Even people who are intentionally trying to work somewhat on or around these things, it's like there's a whole world of problems that blocks effective actual help at the point of people needing help, or at the point of service delivery, or clinical encounters or professional encounters when those happen. That's a kind of general statement, but there's a paper specifically about this, an academic article that is about colliding systems of philanthropy and wicked problems. And the article gets into this exact issue of where, for example, poor women all around the world in cities, in rural locations, in semi-rural locations, who have wicked problems in their lives, like poverty or getting hurt or healthcare needs, especially when it adds up across all these different topics, are just not getting the help they need. And no one is actually dedicated to listening to them, understanding their situation, and working with them to address the problems in concert with looking at family or social network or community, which may be involved in all of this, and there often are, it's not just one person's problems, it's like a bunch of other people in the same location or all around the world are experiencing parallel fractal problems, as Corey says. I'm not sure where that term comes from, but so I want to unpack this paper because it has so much in it, and it links the an example scenario of one person, a woman named Lamisi living in Ghana, with these like the whole an analysis of the problem of dozens and hundreds of organizations locally and globally that are supposed to be working on the issues she's dealing with, but in practice.
Can you say the name of the paper?
Yeah.
It sounds like that's something that we're going to want to unpack later. It was that your plan?
Exactly.
In the webinar later. Yeah. I'd like to share specific text links and stuff from that with materials that we're sharing about webinar 5 so that people can see part of what we're moving through. That's great. That part hadn't connected in my brain, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's called, the paper is called Collective Impact, Dialogue at the Interface of the Colliding Systems of Philanthropy in the World Review of Entrepreneurship, Management, and Sustainable Development, 2020, Robert Yassin and colleagues.
Can you paste it into chat with the URL also?
Yeah.
And we'll keep it with the webinar materials when it goes up on public links so that people can have the text also. Since it's 10:22 Eastern, it's about 7 or 8 minutes before we wrap up for this morning. I'm really excited about this, and I particularly like having the, like, it's interesting, it just fell into place, this opportunity to preview some of the important intersections we're discussing later in webinar 5. And like, then we get this nice break. Well, actually, I think I have interviews and I have other things that I have to do, so it's not actually a break, but it's a break on this topic, and then we come back to it later. And that's really that's been our vibration in Intuitive Social Conference and a number of other spaces. So like, I'm feeling the resonance of that and appreciating it a lot. Let me see. I'll see if I can paste the title here. What kind of approach are you thinking about for webinar 5? Do you want to say anything about how you want to move through those topics? We'll have 90 minutes, but we should stop a couple of times in case people have questions.
Yeah, I think so. This article is maybe can be the centerpiece of it. There are a few other articles or in the basically concepts that are described in articles that I think fit in this well. One is anticipation dialogues, which is a sort of broader version of what's called open dialogue. And it's basically just like this article has the word dialogue in the title. It's like actually dialogue among people in a family or social network, facilitated usually by trained mental health professionals who are significantly questioning the biomedical model and focusing on dialogue as a solution. And I think that it overlaps with this. It's like what's needed is dialogue, like the first paper says, and that's one way to do it. And it's also applicable to addressing crisis of all kinds, like people involved actually talking to each other with facilitators helping talk about it. And that's also a way to address the larger questions. Another thought is what this article suggests as the the solution, or there should never be just one solution, but basically they're saying that for these types of wicked systemic problems, the most viable approach that has been developed is called collective impact. And it generally involves bringing together people from different organizations on a sort of dedicated team, and they get to know each other over time and develop shared language. And they also describe some limits of even that approach. Basically, it's excluding the people in the situations. So anticipation dialogues could be a way to bring these different things together. And this is also what I've been trying to figure out how to do, how to bring together some people from different organizations or so-called epistemic communities, like different audiences or people with certain practice areas, together in dialogue with people in these situations, like we're facilitating already. And this is a way to address the problems as well as develop knowledge that is relevant for other, and practices relevant for other situations.
It also sounds like global philanthropy in ignorance of wicked problem solving is a series that evolves into a slightly different statement, where global philanthropy can no longer be said to be in ignorance of wicked problem solving. I'm not quite sure what that final statement is, but we're certainly evolving it. And it seems like there is plenty of content for multiple webinars to be on the schedule on that topic.
Yeah, exactly. There are a number of angles to unpack, and I can think of a few other journal articles that are also relevant, like the one that addresses how often local consultants, like in given countries that global philanthropy is working, are not taken seriously. And it's like the higher up people from other countries come in and impose their solution on things rather than listening to the people on the ground who are experts in the situations. And although what this article does not address is that usually what's happening locally is the local experts who know more about what's going on are also not listening to the most marginalized people in their communities.
Yeah. And I think that's like those words there are particularly important because they have really broad reach across so many different situations, where if we're saying words like that over and over again, and we're centering that conversation as much as we can, all of us everywhere exposed to the conversation have these emerging opportunities to just discover solutions that we had no idea could be there. If we center that situation and resolving it, and I want to take the last couple of minutes and invite people to Telegram Messenger, because if they find this video somewhere else, I want them to know where we're at. t.me/intuitiveintensive is the group of channels that we are broadcasting to on this particular subject. We have a Catalyst chat scheduled every morning at 10 a.m. Eastern, which is 9 a.m. Central, all the way through December, every single morning, because it's literally the most important thing to be on all of our schedules, to make sure that we start our day each day with these considerations and how we are choosing to collaborate effectively with one another. There is a public chat attached to the main Intuitive Intensive channel, and everyone's invited. We put links there periodically. If you need to find it, or if you have another kind of question, whatever you need, reach out to me, t.me/Max Morris. Brendan, do you want to say your Telegram address so that people can reach out to you directly? Do you remember it? Because I do.
Yes. It's at Brendan XC.
t.me/BrendanXC. I want to also highlight another URL, intuitive.community/support has growing numbers of options for how people can support our initiatives, whether or not you're able to join us directly. Eventbrite, we have more and more and more listings of events that people can register for. And there's always a $0 ticket option. And you can pay what you prefer for something, or you can pay what is for webinars, it's usually a $25 ticket price. And for these Catalyst chats each morning, this half hour that we're doing each morning, we put $15 on it, but you can basically choose whatever you want. And we do ask that if you can direct your donations or ticket prices to PayPal, that gives us most immediate access to dollars. Did I say that today's webinar is at 2 p.m. Eastern, which is 1 p.m. Central? And I didn't read this stuff, but we talked a lot about it. So I'm not going to worry too much about that. We will talk more about tame problems and wicked problems and new beautiful solutions for global philanthropy today at 2 p.m. Eastern in webinar number 5. And I just talked through an extra minute than I intended. See you all on Telegram momentarily, and thanks for tuning in.
Well, thank you.